From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, March 23rd, 2018. And on this day, support at the State House for a bill that would restore funding for a child abuse prevention program. And the Emerald Ash Borer is coming to Maine. We'll look at why it matters. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, 4 generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
The LePage administration this month announced that it plans to end funding for a child abuse prevention program that works directly with at-risk families across the state. Dozens of supporters of that program turned out at a public hearing today on legislation that would restore funding. Mal Leary has more.
For over 3 hours, social service providers from across Maine testified that the community-based program has been an effective addition to state efforts to protect children. Senator Kathy Breen, a Democrat from Falmouth, says the program is a good deal, given its price tag of $2.2 million a year.
CPPC is a cooperative effort to prevent child abuse by bringing together many community members and organizations. CPPC educates them on the risk factors related to child abuse and on community resources available to prevent abuse.
The program has been operating for more than a decade in some parts of the state. Sean Yardley is with Community Concepts, one of the agencies that provide the service.
This is a critical program, and I think you've heard it well, that the peer model really can make a difference in ways that nobody else can.
But the Department of Health and Human Services testified against the legislation, saying the program is duplicative of other efforts. And Deputy Commissioner Mike Marr says the bill is so broadly written that it would interfere with the agency's ability to manage its programs.
We have to always be looking at every single dollar we have. Where does it need to go now? Where are the gaps? Where can we put them? So basically, we feel like we wouldn't be able to make those decisions that are usually deferred to us.
The cuts would take effect next October 1st and were announced just before the death of 10-year-old Marissa Kennedy in Stockton Springs, but after the death of another girl, 4-year-old Kendall Chick, who died in December in Wiscasset. The deaths have prompted an investigation by the legislature's Government Oversight Committee, which has voted to issue its first subpoenas. More subpoenas are expected to be issued in the weeks ahead. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The legislature's investigative office has also been tasked with another project, determining whether the LePage administration retaliated against Maine mill owners because they disagree with the governor's stance on tariffs on Canadian lumber. Steve Missler has details.
The Government Oversight Committee voted unanimously to authorize the investigation. Its decision came just 2 days after Governor LePage tore into lawmakers for questioning his administration's abrupt decision to divert publicly owned logs from mills owned by Jason and Chris Brochu to a Canadian-owned company. State Senator Tom Saviello, a Republican from Wilton, requested the probe after LePage challenged him to do so during a testy hearing held by the Agriculture Committee earlier this week.
If you look at the history that I provided to you, it appears that it may be some kind of possible retribution because of the Brochu's stance on the tariffs coming in.
LePage denied that his administration's decision to divert the timber had anything to do with the dispute over tariffs imposed by the Trump administration last year. Nevertheless, he and the Brochus have been engaged in a very public dispute. The governor has been pushing to end trade tariffs on lumber imports from New Brunswick and Quebec. And in early September, he took the unusual step of criticizing a private company in his weekly radio address. He accused the Brochus of personal greed for supporting the tariffs, which he says harm the region's cross-border forest products industry. The Brochus, who own 4 mills in the state, fired back about a week later in a column appearing in the Bangor Daily News. They said LePage was using false claims to, quote, push a Canada First agenda. Fast forward to February. The Brochus learned that public wood originally destined for their mills had been diverted by the state to Stratton Lumber, a Canadian-owned company owned by the Fontaine family, which supports the governor's tariff stance. Senator Saviello says the move probably wasn't illegal, but
what I could find is that a bad business decision was made, which is picking winners and losers with our public wood, which I don't think is appropriate.
The Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability will now try to determine how and why the decision was made. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The owner of a dominant Maine newspaper group says he's planning to buy two more daily papers and a weekly group. A.J. Higgins has more.
Maine Today Media owner Reed Brower said today that he is purchasing the Times Record of Brunswick and the Journal Tribune of Biddeford, along with mainly media weekly publications. Although these latest acquisitions mean that Brower now owns six of Maine's seven daily newspapers, he says he's committed to allowing each publication to determine how its readership's needs will be met. And Brower says his seven-year track record in building newspaper holdings reflects that business strategy.
I've continued to allow them to operate autonomously, to continue to compete vigorously for stories and for advertising, and not, you know, meddle and get too much into the day-to-day.
Maine Today publishes the Portland Press-Herald and the Maine Sunday Telegram, as well as the Kennebec Journal in Augusta and Morning Sentinel in Waterville. Maine Today also owns the Sun Media Group, which publishes the Sun Journal in Lewiston and several weekly newspapers. The only Maine daily Brower does not control is the Bangor Daily News. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
A destructive insect that threatens to kill all of Maine's ash trees has been bearing down on the state for more than a decade. And new infestations of the emerald ash borer have been found right on Maine's doorstep. It hasn't been found yet in the state, but it's a subject of intense concern for people who depend on Maine's forests, including the state's Wabanaki tribes. Maine Public digital producer Barbara Caridi looks at the threat for a story at mainepublic.org. It's called The Scourge at Maine's Door. Barbara, we have been hearing about the threat of the emerald ash borer now for several years. What's different this time?
Well, it is true that the emerald ash borer has been in the U.S. for a while. It was first discovered here near Detroit, Michigan in 2002, and a short while after that, it was found in Canada, right across the Detroit River in the town of Windsor, Ontario. And since then, it's spread very rapidly in all directions. What's new and what's raising concerns here in Maine is that some new infestations were recently found in Canada, and one of them in the town of Sherbrooke, Quebec, is very close to the Maine border. Meanwhile, it's also heading our way from New Hampshire, and it's now just a few miles away from the Maine town of Lebanon in southern York County.
What are the repercussions of losing all of those ash trees? What are ash trees used for?
The nation's ash trees are worth about $300 billion, according to the USDA. I couldn't find a dollar figure for Maine specifically, but when it comes to sheer numbers of ash trees growing in the 50 states, Maine ranks in the top six. There are three species of ash that grow here, white ash, green ash, and black or brown ash, and all of them have value. There's a company in Shirley, Maine, for example, that makes baseball bats out of white ash. There's another company in Belfast that makes boat oars and paddles out of it. It's used for firewood and many other things. Green ash is what you see lining streets and boulevards, especially in the Midwest. And here in Maine, its seed pods are eaten by various kinds of wildlife. But it's the potential loss of black ash, or brown ash, as it's also known, that's generating the most concern, especially among Maine's indigenous people, the four Wabanaki tribes.
Yeah, I was seeing the that they are so concerned that members of those tribes have been working with foresters and bug specialists to monitor the insect.
That's right. For all four Wabanaki tribes here, the Passamaquoddy, the Penobscot, the Mi'kmaq, and the Maliseet, the ash tree is literally at the root of their culture. In the Wabanaki creation myth, their people literally emerged from an ash tree. And it's from black ash that the Wabanaki extract the pliable fiber they use to make these exquisite, intricate baskets that they've become very well known for worldwide and that are sought by collectors as works of art. About 100 tribal members now rely on this craft for income, and it's been a growing enterprise recently.
Could they make baskets out of some other kind of wood, or does it have to be black ash?
Well, I asked Passamaquoddy basket maker Gabriel Frey about that. He said tribes in other parts of the U.S. do use cedar and other woods to make baskets, but the techniques Wabanaki basket makers use are specific to black ash and have been refined over thousands of years, he said. So the question is, would a basket crafted by a Wabanaki maker out of something other than black ash still be a Wabanaki basket? I think for members of the Wabanaki Confederation of Tribes, that scenario is really just unthinkable.
So what is Maine doing to try to keep the emerald ash borer out of the state?
Well, in 2010, Maine banned imports of any firewood from out of state, and that's one way the bug has been spread so quickly around North America. But that isn't likely to keep it out much longer. State officials told me they expect it to be here in Maine within just a few years, simply from natural spread. Once it gets here, they plan to let loose some types of wasps that feed on the emerald ash borer larvae and help keep the bug in check in Asia. Pesticides really aren't a viable option. They can help save individual trees and have been used that way for some, but they're not really effective in stopping the borer in a large forest setting. In the long term, officials say their best hope is to develop types of ash that are resistant to the bug. In the meantime, they're trying to enlist the public to help find any possible infestations. It might seem hopeless to even try to fight the pest, but state officials say early detection can help contain it, and that would buy the state more time to develop new ways to fight it. We do include a lot of information about how to recognize the signs of the insect and the insect itself on our story.
And you can find Barbara Caridi's story on our front page at mainepublic.org. It has photos, maps, and information on what you can do to help. Thanks so much, Barbara, for talking with me.
My pleasure. Thank you, Nora.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, March 23rd, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.